Chapter 101. Rather takes him to be a young man of very great ability, and I am quite sure, apostrophe at the worthy lady, he always means a great deal more than he says. Apostrophe, the door opens at this point of the disclosure, and who of all people alive walks into the room, but the very Mr. Fairfax, who has been the subject of conversation. Well, it really is curious, apostrophe cries Ma, we were at that very moment talking about you. Apostrophe you did me great honor, apostrophe replies Mr. Fairfax. May I venture to ask what you were saying? Apostrophe apostrophe why, if you must know, apostrophe returns the eldest girl, we were remarking what a very mysterious man you are. Apostrophe a. Apostrophe apostrophe observes Mr. Fairfax, indeed. Apostrophe now Mr. Fairfax says this a, and indeed, which are slight words enough in themselves, with so very unfathomable an air, and accompanies them with such a very equivocal smile, that Ma and the young ladies are more than ever convinced that he means an immensity, and so tell him he is a very dangerous man, and seems to be always thinking ill of somebody, which is precisely the sort of character the censorious young gentleman is most desirous to establish. Wherefore he says, oh, dear, no, apostrophe in a tone, obviously intended to mean, you have me there, apostrophe and which gives them to understand, that they have hit the right nail on the very center of its head. When the conversation ranges from the mystery overhanging the censorious young gentleman's behavior, to the general topics of the day, he sustains his character to admiration. He considers the new tragedy well enough for a new tragedy, but Lord bless us well, no matter, he could say a great deal on that point, but he would rather not, lest he should be thought ill-natured, as he knows he would be. But is not Mr. So, and So's performance truly charming? Apostrophe inquires a young lady. Charming. Apostrophe replies the censorious young gentleman. Oh, dear, yes, certainly. Very charming, oh, very charming indeed. Apostrophe after this, he stirs the fire, smiling contemptuously all the while. And a modest young gentleman, who has been a silent listener, thinks what a great thing it must be, to have such a critical judgment. Of music, pictures, books, and poetry, the censorious young gentleman has an equally fine conception. As to men and women, he can tell all about them at a glance. Now let us hear your opinion of young Mrs. Barker, apostrophe says some great believer in the powers of Mr. Fairfax, but don't be too severe. Apostrophe I never am severe, apostrophe replies the censorious young gentleman. Well, never mind that now. She is very ladylike, is she not? Apostrophe apostrophe ladylike. Apostrophe repeats the censorious young gentleman, for he always repeats when he is at a loss for anything to say. Did you observe her manner? Bless my heart and soul, Mrs. Thompson, did you observe her manner? That's all I ask. Apostrophe I thought I had done so, apostrophe rejoins the poor lady, much perplexed. I did not observe it very closely perhaps. Apostrophe oh, not very closely, apostrophe rejoins the censorious young gentleman, triumphantly. Very good, then I did. Let us talk no more about her. Apostrophe the censorious young gentleman purses up his lips, and nods his head sagely, as he says this. And it is forthwith whispered about, that Mr. Fairfax, who, though he is a little prejudiced, must be admitted to be a very excellent judge, has observed something exceedingly odd in Mrs. Barker's manner. The funny young gentleman, as one funny young gentleman will serve as a sample of all funny young gentlemen we purpose, merely to note down the conduct and behavior of an individual specimen of this class, whom we happened to meet at an annual family Christmas party in the course of this very last Christmas that ever came. We were all seated round a blazing fire which crackled pleasantly as the guests talked merrily, and the urn steamed cheerily for, Being an old-fashioned party, there was an urn and a teapot besides when there came a postman's knock at the door, so violent and sudden that it startled the whole circle and actually caused two or three very interesting and most unaffected young ladies to scream aloud and to exhibit many afflicting symptoms of terror and distress, until they had been several times assured by their respective adorers that they were in no danger. We were about to remark that it was surely beyond post time, and must have been a runaway knock, when our host, who had hitherto been paralyzed with wonder, sank into a chair in a perfect ecstasy of laughter, and offered to lay £20 that it was that droll dog Griggins. He had no sooner said this than the majority of the company and all the children of the house burst into a roar of laughter too, as if some inimitable joke flashed upon them simultaneously, and gave vent to various exclamations of "to be sure it must be Griggins, and how like him that was, and what spirits he was always in," with many other commendatory remarks of the like nature. Not having the happiness to know Griggins, we became extremely desirous to see so pleasant a fellow, the more especially as a stout gentleman with a powdered head, who was sitting with his breeches buckles almost touching the hob, whispered us he was a wit of the first water, when the door opened, and Mr. Griggins being announced, presented himself, amidst another shout of laughter and a loud clapping of hands from the younger branches. This welcome he acknowledged by sundry contortions of countenance, imitative of the clown in one of the new pantomimes, which were so extremely successful, that one stout gentleman rolled upon an ottoman in a paroxysm of delight, protesting, with many gasps, that if somebody didn't make that fellow Griggins leave off, he would be the death of him, he knew. At this the company only laughed more boisterously than before, and as we always like to accommodate our tone and spirit, if possible, to the humor of any society in which we find ourselves, we laughed with the rest, and exclaimed, "Oh! Capital, capital!" apostrophe apostrophe as loud as any of them. When he had quite exhausted all beholders, Mr. Griggins received the welcomes and congratulations of the circle, and went through the needful introductions with much ease and many puns. This ceremony over, he avowed his intention of sitting in somebody's lap, unless the young ladies made room for him on the sofa, which being done, after a great deal of tittering and pleasantry, he squeezed himself among them, and likened his condition to that of love among the roses. At this novel jest we all roared once more. "You should consider yourself highly honored, sir," apostrophe said we. "Sir, apostrophe," replied Mr. Griggins, "you do me proud." Apostrophe here everybody laughed again, and the stout gentleman by the fire whispered in our ear that Griggins was making a dead set at us. The tea things having been removed, we all sat down to a round game, and here Mr. Griggins shone forth with peculiar brilliance eye, abstracting other people's fish, and looking over their hands, in the most comical manner. He made one most excellent joke in snuffing a candle, which was neither more nor less than setting fire to the hair of a pale young gentleman who sat next him, and afterwards begging his pardon with considerable humor. As the young gentleman could not see the joke, however, possibly in consequence of its being on the top of his own head, it did not go off quite as well as it might have done. Indeed, the young gentleman was heard to murmur some general references to impertinence, apostrophe and a rascal, and to state the number of his lodgings, in an angry tone a turn of the conversation which might have been productive of slaughterous consequences, if a young lady, betrothed to the young gentleman, had not used her immediate influence to bring about a reconciliation. Emphatically declaring in an agitated whisper, intended for his peculiar edification, but audible to the whole table, that if he went on in that way, she never would think of him otherwise than as a friend, though as that she must always regard him. At this terrible threat the young gentleman became calm, and the young lady, overcome by the revulsion of feeling, instantaneously fainted. Mr. Griggin's spirits were slightly depressed for a short period by this unlooked-for result of such a harmless pleasantry, but being promptly elevated by the attentions of the host and several glasses of wine, he soon recovered, and became even more vivacious than before, insomuch that the stout gentleman previously referred to assured us that, although he had known him, since he was that high something smaller than a nutmeg grater, he had never beheld him in such excellent cue. When the round game and several games at blind man's buff which followed it were all over, and we were going down to supper, the inexhaustible Mr. Griggins produced a small sprig of mistletoe from his waistcoat pocket, and commenced a general kissing of the assembled females, which occasioned great commotion and much excitement. We observed that several young gentlemen, including the young gentleman with the pale countenance, were greatly scandalized at this indecorous proceeding, and talked very big among themselves in corners. And we observed, too, that several young ladies, when remonstrated with by the aforesaid young gentlemen, called each other to witness how they had struggled, and protested vehemently that it was very rude, and that they were surprised at Mrs. Brown's allowing it, and that they couldn't bear it, and had no patience with such impertinence. But such is the gentle and forgiving nature of woman, that although we looked very narrowly for it, we could not detect the slightest harshness in the subsequent treatment of Mr. Griggins. Indeed, upon the whole, it struck us that among the ladies he seemed rather more popular than before. To recount all the drollery of Mr. Griggins at supper would fill such a tiny volume as this, to the very bottom of the outside cover. How he drank out of other people's glasses, and ate of other people's bread, how he frightened into screaming convulsions a little boy who was sitting up to supper in a high chair, by sinking below the table and suddenly reappearing with a mask on, how the hostess was really surprised that anybody could find a pleasure in tormenting children, and how the host frowned at the hostess, and felt convinced that Mr. Griggins had done it with the very best intentions. How Mr. Griggins explained, and how everybody's good humor was restored but the child's. To tell these and a hundred other things ever so briefly would occupy more of our room and our readers' patience than either they or we can conveniently spare. Therefore we change the subject, merely observing that we have offered no description of the funny young gentleman's personal appearance, believing that almost every society has a Griggins of its own, and leaving all readers to supply the deficiency, according to the particular circumstances of their particular case. The theatrical young gentleman. All gentlemen who love the drama, and there are few gentlemen who are not attached to the most intellectual and rational of all our amusements, do not come within this definition. As we have no mean relish for theatrical entertainments ourself, we are disinterestedly anxious that this should be perfectly understood. The theatrical young gentleman has early and important information on all theatrical topics. Well, apostrophe says he, abruptly, when you meet him in the street, here's a pretty to-do. Flimkins has thrown up his part in the melodrama at the Surrey. Apostrophe and what's to be done? Apostrophe you inquire with as much gravity as you can counterfeit. Ah, that's the point, apostrophe replies the theatrical young gentleman, looking very serious. Boozle declines it, positively declines it. From all I am told, I should say it was decidedly in Boozle's line, and that he would be very likely to make a great hit in it. But he objects on the ground of Flimkins having been put up in the part first, and says no earthly power shall induce him to take the character. It's a fine part, too excellent business, I'm told. He has to kill 6 people in the course of the piece, and to fight over a bridge in red fire, which is as safe a card, you know, as can be. Don't mention it, but I hear that the last scene, when he is first poisoned, and then stabbed, by Mrs. Flimkins as Vengadora, will be the greatest thing that has been done these many years. Apostrophe with this piece of news, and laying his finger on his lips as a caution for you, not to excite the town with it, the theatrical young gentleman hurries away. The theatrical young gentleman, from often frequenting the different theatrical establishments, has pen and familiar names for them all. Thus Covent Garden is the garden, Drury Lane the lane, the Victoria the Vic, and the Olympic the pick. Actresses, too, are always designated by their surnames only, as Taylor, Nisbet, Fawcett, Honey, that talented and ladylike girl Sheriff, that clever little creature Horton, and so on. In the same manner he prefixes Christian names when he mentions actors, as Charlie Young, Jemmy Buckstone, Fred Yates, Paul Bedford. When he is at a loss for a Christian name, the word old applied indiscriminately answers quite as well. As old Charlie Matthews at Vestris's, old Harley, and old Braham. He has a great knowledge of the private proceedings of actresses, especially of their getting married, and can tell you in a breath half a dozen who have changed their names without avowing it. Whenever an alteration of this kind is made in the playbills, he will remind you that he let you into the secret 6 months ago. The theatrical young gentleman has a great reverence for all that is connected with the stage department of the different theaters. He would, at any time, prefer going a street or two out of his way, to omitting to pass a stage entrance, into which he always looks with a curious and searching eye. If he can only identify a popular actor in the street, he is in a perfect transport of delight, and no sooner meets him, than he hurries back, and walks a few paces in front of him, so that he can turn round from time to time, and have a good stare at his features. He looks upon the theatrical fun dinner as one of the most enchanting festivities ever known, and thinks that to be a member of the Garrick Club, and see so many actors in their plain clothes, must be one of the highest gratifications the world can bestow. The theatrical young gentleman is a constant half-price visitor at one or other of the theaters, and has an infinite relish for all pieces which display the fullest resources of the establishment. He likes to place implicit reliance upon the playbills when he goes to see a showpiece, and works himself up to such a pitch of enthusiasm, as not only to believe, if the bills say so, that there are 375 people on the stage at one time in the last scene, but is highly indignant with you, unless you believe it also. He considers that, if the stage be opened from the footlights to the back wall, in any new play, the piece is a triumph of dramatic writing, and applauds accordingly. He has a great notion of trapdoors too, and thinks any character going down or coming up a trap, no matter whether he be an angel or a demon, they both do it occasionally, one of the most interesting feats in the whole range of scenic illusion. Besides these acquirements, he has several veracious accounts to communicate of the private manners and customs of different actors, which, during the pauses of a quadrille, he usually communicates to his partner, or imparts to his neighbor at a supper table. Thus he is advised that Mr. Liston always had a footman in gorgeous livery waiting at the side scene with a brandy bottle and tumbler, to administer half a pint or so of spirit to him every time he came off, without which assistance he must infallibly have fainted. He knows for a fact that, after an arduous part, Mr. George Bennett is put between two feather beds to absorb the perspiration, and is credibly informed that Mr. Baker has, for many years, submitted to a course of lukewarm toast and water to qualify him to sustain his favorite characters. He looks upon Mr. Fitzball as the principal dramatic genius and poet of the day, but holds that there are great writers extant besides him, in proof whereof he refers you to various dramas and melodramas recently produced, of which he takes in all the sixpenny and threepenny editions as fast as they appear. The theatrical young gentleman is a great advocate for violence of emotion and redundancy of action. If a father has to curse a child upon the stage, he likes to see it done in the thoroughgoing style, with no mistake about it. To which end it is essential that the child should follow the father on her knees, and be knocked violently over on her face by the old gentleman as he goes into a small cottage, and shuts the door behind him. He likes to see a blessing invoked upon the young lady. When the old gentleman repents, with equal earnestness, and accompanied by the usual conventional forms, which consist of the old gentleman looking. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.